Alpine Credits, where homeowners get approved.
Oh, hi. I'd like to apply for a loan so I can consolidate some of my debts.
Sure. Do you own your home?
Yes. But Carl, our resident ghost, keeps saying it's his house and we should get out.
Okay. But you are the registered owner.
Yes.
Then you're approved.
Hey, hear that, Carl? Huh?
Alpine Credits, where homeowners get approved.
Go to alpinecredits.ca to get started. Some conditions apply.
FSRA license 12616.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Your home smart speaker, Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan, our buddy Dave Poulin here in a moment, Luke Wilson and Al's brother later this hour on a big Monday nighter, Tom Brady and the Bucks at home against the Saints. We get the Raptors in action tonight as well. I think Jack Armstrong is going to be singing tonight because he's got his big Christmas sing-along show tomorrow. I guarantee you, you got to get Jack singing tonight, right?
For sure.
Has
to. Warm-up. Little warm-up.
Little warm-up.
I think Jack hits the sauce before he gets on stage. I think he said last week he's going to play it cool. I think he realizes he's about to do a Christmas concert at around 5 p.m. And he says, bring the juice.
Takes a Hal Gill to cure it, to cure the nerves.
He goes straight Hal Gill.
Yeah, I think that could be helpful. Listen, a little liquid courage never hurt.
Dude, it's just like the wedding. It's like the wedding or karaoke. No one's good or nobody's into it, stone sober. You do two or three Hal Gills, and you turn into a rock star.
You can, but you do three or four, and you turn into a pirate up there, man.
Exactly.
And then you're
in
big trouble. Like
then you get the tap.
You go over the top.
You can't do triple overtime, Hal Gill. You just do a double Hal Gill, and you're on.
Yes, it's such a thin line, especially at weddings. Like if you get a groom or a best man or something, like because it's the thinnest line.
The best man's the scariest one. Yeah. If he's doing the speech and he starts bringing up some gory stories, it's outrageous.
Yeah,
you want to run for your life.
It really can be. In fact, it's funny you mention that because my best man, Dave, you guys were both at my wedding.
I love Dave.
He reminded me. I forgot. He had a little photo shoot going. He posted the pictures that we were goofing on last week of me day one at TSN. He posted that at my wedding and goofed on me for the shirt and the earmuffs and bad blue t-shirt pick. He had access to both of that. Like, you talk about weapons that he brought that I think are completely unnecessary. I totally forgot that he brought out that type of ammo, but he did. He had, like, a photo shoot where he was goofing on my gear and
how unhealthy I looked.
Hang on a sec. I was at your wedding. I never saw that.
I'm telling you, it happened. I remember now. He sent me a text the other day. He heard us goofing on it. He's like, remember I brought that stuff to the best man speech? I'm like, God, I forgot.
I remember. And I
Gutless.
Remember. Oh, you put a little clinic on the D floor from what I remember.
Oh, yes.
There was
absolutely
a full,
twinkle toes.
There was
by
a full on
high noon.
I think the jacket came off. I feel like you were loosening
up. I think Pooley's calling in.
There was a full clinic. And remind me to get to Hayes. I don't know if you got a picture. Did you get a picture on Saturday night?
I did at around 2 in the morning. I happened to be asleep at the time.
There was a guy. I ran into it. We'll get into it later. I ran into an old friend of Hayes's, put it that way.
You can't miss him.
This guy's a beauty, man.
He is a beautician.
But he was not shy to throw some Hayes stories around there.
Oh, he's got a million of them. Believe me, that's a two-way street, as I'm sure you can imagine. We'll get into that a little bit later on. I actually want to thank Jordan Binnington for allowing me to go back and watch Wendell Clark lay out John Casey because it's one of my favorite clips on YouTube.
Yeah, it's the forearm shiver with the butt end of his stick and his glove and his forearm.
Because all I can think of is Binnington's so lucky that Wendell doesn't play in the league. Because, like, imagine Binnington did that to Wendell Clark. How Wendell would have beaten the hell out of him over the weekend.
You don't get up. And even, you know what, guys, it's to a point where Like, I played with Craig Berube. You guys know him.
Yeah.
Like, when the coach goes, all right, like, knock it. Basically, I'm paraphrasing, saying, this guy just needs to stop the puck
right.
and knock it off.
Stop That's being a hero.
He really does, Noodles. I think that the St. Louis Blues season is kind of on, like, it's on the fence right now.
Yeah.
And as far as Binnington being elite, that's kind of on the fence right now. Ever since, like, he played some really good goal last year, I believe, but, like, it hasn't been the same guy that led that team to the Stanley Cup and got that contract, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's absolutely for sure. Here's our TSN hockey analyst, Dave Pullen, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Back in your heyday, Pulley, when you got to Philly, could you imagine a goalie trying to lay out, you know, Bobby Clark or something? Like, what kind of a beating that goalie would take? Because it doesn't really happen anymore, but it seemed to me the rules were back in the day. If you come out of your crease and try to be a hero, all rules are lost. Anything can happen at that point.
Well, I'm laughing, Brian, because you may forget who was behind us in our net.
He had Hexie.
Very good point.
Who was coming out to tame someone else. When Craig Berube tells you to settle down, guys, well, there's two things. One, you better settle down. But number two, his relative version of settling down, that's a pretty high bar. Like, you've crossed a pretty high bar if he has to tell you to settle down. But I just think that's frustration coming out of Binnington. And it's, you know, there's a little bit of an edge there. He's sort of had these ebbs and flows. He was in the minors, then he comes up and wins the Stanley Cup. Then he fades a little bit, and he came back again, and they, you know, they made a decision to keep him over Huso. And now, you know, and now he's struggling again. So he's had these crazy ebbs and flows, and each time he's done something physical. Now, whether he thinks that brings him back into the fold or what it may be, but it doesn't work and it doesn't help, and someone is going to get a hold of him and tune him up.
This is where I'm going to go, Pooley, because I understand, and you're right. Like, Binnington has had a world of inconsistency. We'll call it the last two seasons. But, you know, it's hard. I feel like you got to pick your spots. Like, he just gave up a four spot early in the second period and was getting pulled, and he's going after Zucker. Like, you know,
right.
Zucker's, like, that's the toughest part, because you guys put, and everybody weigh in on this, you put yourself in on the bench as your goalie's getting pulled after four, and they weren't, not all of them were great goals. You're getting pulled after four, and you start acting up. Like, guys on the bench are like, knock it off, man.
No,
like,
kidding. Now we got to,
like,
go.
That's where it's a bit of a struggle for me. I understand and I respect the intensity from Binnington, but you also have to understand, like, you got to back it up with really good play. And that's something where, you know, he's not there consistently. That's where I think the players might look at him and go, man, we just need you to make some saves and we'll be fine here.
Yeah, and that's exactly right, because when they did win the cup, he was terrific.
He was.
And that's a team that came from last place.
Yeah.
And, you know, he just hasn't been able to find it. And not only find it, he's getting lit up, guys. I mean, he you know, he's getting tuned up pretty well right now. I mean, there's sixes and fives littered on the board every time he plays, and they're not on his side of the scoreboard. And, you know, the frustration is building. And in particular, when you see the guy in Detroit's had a pretty good start to his year. So I know you don't think it's about comparisons, but it is about comparisons. You're looking at, you were chosen over a guy, and he's outplaying you right now, amongst others.
With Dave Pullen. So we were saying this earlier, Pulley, that tomorrow night, this has never happened in NHL history, where two guys with an 18-game point streak are going to meet up against each other, where Marner got to 19 on Saturday. Jason Robertson is at 18. It's pretty incredible, considering they don't play in the same division, let alone, you know, conference.
Right.
They're going to meet up twice a year, and coincidentally, it's going to be tomorrow night. Both streaks have been incredible. Both, you know, the stats are off the charts. But what do you say about that as a hockey historian? How cool could this be tomorrow night?
Well, terrific, and I hope they both keep them going. And
right.
You know what Marner's done is, it's remarkable to watch. I mean, he's such a good player, and, you know, in his situation, his team gets a lot of notice. He's got other stars who get a lot of notice. If he was a standalone on a team, we'd hear a lot more about him. I think he gets a lot of press. Around the league, it's kind of funny, you know, and people talk to me. And I've been all over the place in the last 5 or 6 weeks. Oh, I feel like a guy who's been on the injured list, because I haven't worked with you in I don't know how long. Like, we haven't been line mates in months. I've been the IR or something, but Yeah, so we're going to get to work together this week, but I've been in a lot of buildings, and you know, and I get asked about Marner quite a bit, like how good is he? He's really, really good. And I know he's been named a first team All-Star, but somehow with Matthews, he still flies under the radar a little bit. And, you know, it's interesting because he's very well respected around the league without a question, but he does it. And he does it at both ends of the ice. He does it from the defensive standpoint. He attacks very well with and without the puck. You know, Jason Robertson, none of us knew very much about him. And he burst onto the scene, and it's kind of interesting because you knew more about his brother, who's a second-round pick of the Leafs, and obviously the market we're in, and he was a second-round pick of Dallas. You just didn't know as much about him. You know, he got the big growth spurt, and in two ways. He got it in his body, and he got it in his goal scoring. And even when he got his 41 last year, you thought, okay, kind of a perfect storm because Ben and Sagan both had off years last year, so he gets kind of bumped up, and Pavelski has a great year, and he plays with him, and he gets the number one role, and nobody really is that worried about him. But this year, coming back, now he sort of gets the advantage of, now Ben is back. All teams have to worry about Ben and him. And so it's, you know, the curse of Ben not being there as well as he can play gave him his initial entree onto the first line. But now he's benefiting because those guys are playing better and teams have to worry about matchups. But man, that guy is a good player. And he's kind of that sneaky long player. Like he seems to, almost like he's a little bit Inspector Gadgety, and his arms go a little longer than you think they do, and his stick gets to a little different place than you think it does. But he scores goals, and it almost looks easy, but he's on a serious roll right now. So coming in, it's going to be fun. It's a great storyline having those two young players on such a roll, because putting up points that many games in a row, man, that's amazing.
Pooley, where did you have the Leafs goaltending on the bingo card as far as, like, getting healthy and getting in the net and getting the job done?
The biggest question mark for them going into the year, without a doubt. And if anybody didn't have that, they knew something that they either fabricated or, I mean, there was just a lot of hope involved from Leaf fans, and it was legitimate. But, you know, and where does Sjogren factor in? Because, man, he kept it together for a while there. Like, he held things together when both those guys were down. And Matt Murray is looking like we've seen him look. Like, he did this in Ottawa, and Jamie and I do a lot of those games, and he did this in Ottawa for spurts of 5, 6, or 7 games. And he did it on a few different occasions. The problem is it didn't last. And certainly now, you know, he has won games for them. I mean, he's played well and won games for them. And Samsonov coming back, now the beauty of it is, you know, you're not picking how the rotation goes from a negative sense. You're picking how the rotation goes from a positive sense. And you've got two guys to go on a roll here, and you can really figure this out. And this could be a really good combination together.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the key is to manage it, right? Like, Matt Murray's a guy who's played 50 games, 50-50, 49. There was a stretch of 3 years there where that was kind of his ceiling, right? So now you've got Samsonov, who's healthy. You can go back and forth. And there were a couple times against Tampa. Like, I loved that game the other night. I thought
great
it was
game.
A really, really good hockey game. Good hockey. And, you know, there were some collisions. He got a little tap there from Stamkos, and I was concerned. There was another time where he stayed down. Like, this is where you're watching him and going, okay, like, you're going to get up. Is he okay? Yeah, that type of stuff. He did. Now, I didn't love the game-winning goal. You're not going to have your terrible.
Stunk.
Terrible.
Awful.
Okay, but you're still going to have I thought he gave them some saves. And at the end of the day, I'd probably go to Samsonov tomorrow.
It's going to be Murray, though. I think Keith just announced.
And you know what? If you're going to roll, just make sure you're managing his body. That's the biggest thing, because you don't want to get to a situation where if it's a physical game, then, you know, he gets a little bit shy or, you know, gets hit into, and now we've got an injury on our hands. I want to make sure that both of those guys are feeling really good about their game. How do you feel about that, Pooley?
Yeah, and I think that's it. That's what I talked about, managing from a positive standpoint.
Right.
And these are big boys now, you know. These aren't kids, and you really sit down with them. And I think whether it's the goalie coach or Sheldon Keith sits down with them and says, okay, you know, give me your ideal scenario and we'll try and work within it. Like, what's your ideal scenario? And the goalies are realistic now. I think if you used to tell goalies what's your ideal scenario, they'd say, I want to play every game. And, you know, I mean, if you're Martin Brodeur, well, you know, I can take game one, game 64, and game, you know, 73 off, and then I'll be fine. But now I think guys are realistic about it, and they know their bodies. And even the way the schedule breaks in the next, you know, few weeks, you've kind of got those three-game weeks where you go every second day, and then you get an extra day in there. Every second day, and then you get an extra day in there. And there's no back-to-backs until, I think, until next – I don't think there's any in December, until next early in January. So I think you're in control of this in a very positive manner. And, guys, this team is playing better team defense than they've played in a long time. And when the D went down the way they did, and we haven't had a chance to talk a lot, but when they did, I mean, basically it was a survival D put together. Mm-hmm. And the anchor on that, you cannot say enough about Mark Giordano and what he's done. And he has just been tremendous. I mean, you know, 39 years old, and to put the mileage on, and, you know, he's squeezing it out of Justin Hall, which we know Hall needs a partner, and he's getting it right now. The two Swedes, Sandin and Lilligren, have been great. And then the third pairing, it looks like Connor Timmins may be going in, but, you know, Mac Hollowell, when he comes up, you know, and his D partner is actually bigger than him, and his D partner is Victor Mete, you're like, how is this going to work out? But he did what he had to do, and he got the puck out. He moved it quick enough, and, you know, he didn't just get small. He's been small his whole life, so he knows how to play with big guys. But the biggest thing for me was how many passes I saw to a centerman 5 feet away from these D. And Matthews below the goal line, Tavares below the goal line, you know, Kampf below the goal line in the defensive zone, and really working in the triangles, supporting their D. I think the centermen have done a tremendous job defensively, and that's where it's been the key for them, is they've played team defense in front of these goaltenders that are playing well.
Yeah, it sounds like Connor Timmins will make his debut tomorrow, and it sounds as if TJ Brody could be back by the end of the week. So, you know, Brody returns. Riley's still probably at least a month away, I would think, maybe more. But with the way they're playing, like, you can allow Riley to breathe a little bit. It doesn't have to be forced back into the lineup. Again, a month away, we'll see. Things can change over the course of a month. But to your point, Pooley, they go into Tampa where Sorelli returns. Tampa's at home. You got Vasilevsky in net. Kucherov's been rocking. Stamkos's been rocking. I thought it was a really balanced, quality game. I don't think either team outplayed the other. It was worthy of overtime. And that says, I think, a lot about the Leafs being back into that situation where they just continue to plug along. And,
well, it's funny, Brian, they look because good. You talk about overtime. They're 1-6 in overtime.
Yeah,
and it's not their D that are losing the games in overtime. Like, you can talk about, you know, their patchwork D, but it's not their D. I mean, your big three are on the ice at various points, and it bugs you that they're 1-6 in overtime, because their top end skill is way too good to be 1-6 in overtime. And if you tweak that part of the record just a little bit, you say you win three of those, you know, now you're right at the top of the league instead of, you know, 5 points
right
off.
And it's so quick. It was like that the other night. Matthews turns the puck over, and boom, it's in the net. Like, not even
look
a
who's
change.
On the ice there. You know, yeah. It's Matthews and Marner on the ice there. I mean, those are the guys who are getting scored on. And it's frustrating because your defense has done such a good job right up to that point. And, you know, let's face it, if you're complaining about overtime losses and you've only lost five in regulation, then, you know, you're complaining about a fairly minor point, but it's still significant because it's not your D that's losing those.
That's right. With Dave Poulin, our TSN hockey analyst. So reports over the weekend coming out that Brock Besser is available for trade. Maybe his agent even has the green light to go and activate one. And he just signed a 3-year deal in July. They just gave JT Miller that extension. They're trying to figure out what they're going to do with Bo Horvat. I can't figure out Vancouver, Pooley. Like, what are they? And what are they trying to do? Are they trying to tank? It just feels like a bunch of middle ground moves. Just sit right in the middle of the league forever. And
yeah, Brian, I'm not sure Vancouver can figure out Vancouver.
No.
Like, I'm really not. And, you know, we talk about ebbs and flows, and every time you think, okay, you know, they've lost three in a row, they got a couple of tough games coming up, then they pull a couple out, then they win in overtime, then they beat somebody, and they come back, and somebody has a great game, and now Demko's out long-term. You know, how's that going to factor in the equation? It's almost like they want someone to force them to make a move.
David, do you think they owe it to somebody to kind of to let them know what their intentions are here, whether it be the fan base, media, like, or is it just we know what we're doing and it's none of anyone's business?
Well, it's a pretty veteran guy back there in Jimmy Rutherford, right? He's running the show, and, you know, Patrick Colvin's the general manager, but, you know, it's pretty clear that Jimmy Rutherford's the guy, and he's doing it on his terms, though. Clearly, he hasn't had offers. I think the players that we've all talked about have been out there, but he clearly hasn't had offers that he liked. You know, we had heard Tyler Myers was available, you know, different guys at different times, whether Luke Shen was, you know, now it's Besser, but even how it happens, like, and then Ben Hankinson seems to have been involved in something like this before, where why is the agent calling around for a player like that? Because the GM, is that intoning that the GM's called around and he's telling the agent, look, you think he's so good, you go find a trade for him because I can't.
Right.
I mean, well, you know, that's kind of a weird thing to hear about, right? Like, you keep telling me how great this guy is, you go try and trade him. You see how good a GM you are. And, you know, that's strange. I mean, that is strange. And Besser, he was a guy who, man, when he came in the league there, he was close to 30 his first year. It looked like he was going to be a real sharpshooter. And he's just sort of middling. And now you're thinking, what is Brock Besser? Is he a guy who's going to get you 20 or 22 a year? That feels like it's that more to me now than it is if you're trying to trade a 40-goal scorer.
That's where I was going to go. 25 years old at $6.6 million this year and two after. Now, he had 23 last year, but the year before he had 23 in 56. And you're right, Pooley, when he first came in, he had 29 in 62. There's two things that when I think of Brock Besser, is I'm not sure he's a guy who's had injury issues, obviously with his father passing, all of that, like had the off-ice trauma, but has he been healthy enough to play 82? And then what is he when he plays? Like, do you see, is he a second line right winger, you know, on a deeper team? Is he a seven type of thing? Is he a top
line? Jamie, before he gets healthy, like, he's got to get healthy, and he's also, before Pooley chimes in, he's also got to find a couple miles per hour with his feet. So he's got to get his body healthy, and then he's got to figure out how to move around the ice that split second faster.
Yeah.
Yeah, the number of games played, I mean, he seems to always have something going on. In terms of being banged up, and he needs a passer, clearly. I mean, he's a finisher, is what it looks like to me. I don't think he's going to create a lot on his own. So I think there's still questions about exactly what he is, and that's probably part of the problem here, too.
Yeah, I would think so, for sure. All right, Pooley, good to have you back, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
Great, guys. Have a good night. Thanks.
Dave Pullen, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota and check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory arriving daily. It's time to Toyota. Visit MapleToyota.com. Even the goofiness with him being out of the lineup and Bruce Boudreau saying it's tough love, and then there's an injury in warm-up and he goes in. It's like, what are you doing? Like, well, it just seems like a gong
show. That's embarrassing when you think you're getting scratched and then it's like, oh, actually,
we need
you are playing.
And there's a lot of, like, people pointing that his father passed away of cancer and it was on, you know, cancer.
Hockey night. Like, fights cancer night.
I understand that, but you're trying to win games. Like, you know, there's the moral obligation, but there's also you're trying to, and if he hasn't played well enough, then, you know, ultimately he probably was going to be scratched regardless of what day that was. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's tough to hear. But Boudreau's fighting for his life down there. They're trying to win games. And obviously, he hasn't played well enough. That's the thing. And Bruce said he could have been a number of players. Garland's in that situation.
Oh,
Garland's
yeah.
a $5 million right winger that, you know, he hasn't been doing anything.
They're so
it's
committed.
It's this bizarro world. Like, you look at the Garland deal, he's on the bubble. Ekman Larson was on the top of the world, a coveted defenseman in the league. He goes out there and he's a ghost. It's like, it's bizarro land, man.
Yeah.
It really is.
Getting paid money. Like, they got a bunch of guys they just don't like that they're paying a lot of money to.
That's the crazy thing.
The crux of the issue.
I think
it's like our show. They're paying us and they hate us.
Possibly, yeah. It's cap crunching around this show,
exactly.
That's for sure.
But I you know, like, that Miller, I think, is a fantastic player, but he's a lightning rod because there's nights where, you know, the fan base will just be so mad at him. They'd be like, do you see that back check?
Oh, man, does he get isolated on a lazy back check? every fifth game. It's like, yeah, look at this guy.
Exactly.
And but he's got no excuse for it. It's a bad look. It is.
But I think he's a really good player. Really good. But
I agree.
You know, they're just an enigma. That's what they are.
Yeah, now Demko's out. It's heavy lifting.
Yeah.
Out in Vancouver. They're in action tonight. All right, Luke Wilson coming up, Al's brother coming up. Tom Brady, does he still sell? I mean, he's on primetime tonight. Doesn't feel like a ton of buzz for Brady, right? It's more about Joe Burrow. It's more about Mahomes and Allen, et cetera. So we'll catch up with Luke, get his take on that. The biggest statement made over the weekend, what's up with Baker Mayfield and the Niners? That and more with Luke Wilson next. All right, Chris Johnston later this afternoon. Raptors Celtics tonight. Big Monday Nighter, man. Battle of the NFC South. You got Brady at home against the Saints, and I'm just seeing on FanDuel, finally money's coming back in on Tampa. The line's up to 3.5 because somehow that was a 3-point game. I have no idea how it's only a 3.5-point spread, but Al's brother will join us in about 15 minutes, and I'm sure he'll be snarky, and I know what pick you guys are making. Everyone on earth knows who you're taking. But with that said, before we get to the actual picking of games, we can break down what happened yesterday. It was a wild weekend in the NFL, and here's our main man, our NFL analyst, Super Bowl winner, and a guy who has to chew on it every once in a while when Al's brother comes over the top. There's our boy, Luke Wilson. What's up, Luke?
How we living, boys? How's it going?
Well, it's going pretty well, man. It's going better here than it is in San Fran. I mean, a lot of storylines over the weekend, but I would say the biggest would be Garoppolo being done for the year. And the Niners look really good. Their defense is elite. They got weapons with McCaffrey and Debo and Ayuk. But how do they possibly keep this on the rails? What do you think is going to happen in San Fran?
I really don't think it's that big of an issue. I know that might be an insane idea, but I look at this team, and let's start with their defense. They're the number one ranked defense in the NFL. And they're playing very, very well. And they do a lot of great things on defense very well. It's tough to run the ball against them. It's tough to pass the ball because of the pass rush. I mean, the front seven is dominant. So to me, that's their identity. And then now, obviously, in this league, you think of, okay, your starting quarterback goes down. It's a huge issue. Your backup quarterback goes down. And now it's just a bloodbath. However, I don't really think that, you know, how should I phrase this nicely? I would say that the weakest part of this offense has probably been their quarterback play. And I'm not using it as a shot at Jimmy G. I would say that they don't really ask him to do much. So I do think that the margin of error for them to win games is now shrunk. But you put Purdy in there, you just basically need to, one, not turn the ball over, and two, manage the game. And what I also think will make him comfortable is it's not like he's coming into a bad situation where he's got no talent around him. Arguably, they have some of the most talented, skilled players in the NFL across the board. I mean, Kittle, Ayuk, Samuel, CMC, Elijah Mitchell. I mean, the list goes on and on. So to me, are they worse off? Sure. But are they in a desperate situation? Are they not going to make the playoffs? Absolutely not. This team is very, very good.
What about Baker Mayfield as an option? Do you sniff around or let it ride on that guy?
Oh, dog! If I am in that Niners organization,
you're like, don't even
I'm calling Baker.
You're calling Baker. Put it on the line. Wow. Calling up Baker.
Oh, dog! Look at his face,
dude. Are you being serious right now?
I am, but hear me out. Hear me out.
I'm listening.
I don't even know who it is. I should know this. Who is their fourth-string quarterback?
They just picked up the guy who's been everywhere. What's his name? Is it Harrison?
Josh Johnson?
Johnson. Yeah, he's played for 15 teams now or something.
I love it.
Yeah, they just picked him up.
It's either him or Nathan Peterman.
Okay, that's what I'm saying, O-Dog. I mean, at this point, you got to think like, hey, let's bring Baker in to be our backup. You got to think that. Over Josh Johnson. I know that there's a lot of people in our Baker Mayfield fans, but come on now. You got to have Baker in there as your backup option if he's available. I mean, over Josh Johnson, over Peterman. I don't know. That would be my. Some of the interviews that he had while PJ Walker was starting over him, he certainly said the right things. Hey, it's all about winning. PJ deserves a spot. So maybe he could be a guy that helps Purdy out a little bit, a little bit. I'm not saying he's going to come in and, you know, lead him to the land of milk and honey, but I think Baker Mayfield would be a very good addition to this team right now.
Talking about additions, how good would the Cowboys be if they sign OBJ?
Here's another one, Noodles. I don't know. It would be a great signing, but I don't know if it's that big of a difference. Especially, you know, depending on how much money it is and how many years, because the rumor is that he wants to be there for a couple of years at an extreme price tag. And you saw last night, I think Michael Gallup, he was hurt earlier in the year for a little bit. Now all of a sudden it's like, hey, he looked pretty good last night. I mean, CeeDee Lamb is their true number one. They love to run the ball, as they should. You've got probably the best running back combination in the league as far as talent goes. I might put A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones in the conversation, but to me, Tony Pollard and Zeke are the best 1-2 punch in the game right now. So you run the ball extremely well. You have two great backs. You have a phenomenal wide receiver. Your second guy, Michael Gallup, I think is very, very good. And your third guy, they don't use him very much unless Cooper Rush is in the game. But Noah Brown is a good third wide receiver. We've seen him do it. So is adding OBJ into the fold make them better? 1,000%.
Is it worth the headache?
Is it worth a two-year deal? Potentially a headache? No. This team has got enough pieces. Dallas has enough pieces to give Philly a run for their money in the playoffs and potentially go to the Super Bowl. Potentially. I'm not saying they're going to do it, but if they don't do it, it's not because they don't have the talent.
With Luke Wilson, I do think they have some self-esteem issues when it comes to Philly. Just even through their fan base, which I think Jerry Jones picks up on that energy. Like, Dallas puts 33 points up in the fourth quarter, which a lot of that was just Matt Ryan being awful and the Colts being terrible. But still, 33 is significant. Yet, that's not, like, the most impressive win of the weekend for me. It might have been Niners over Dolphins, but probably Eagles stomping the Titans. Like, A.J. Yeah. Brown absolutely put on a clinic. At Jalen Hurts, if you haven't been paying attention, man, he looks like he's been in the league for 15 years. Like, he knows when to throw the ball away. He knows exactly how to take contact when he needs to make a play.
Knows how to flush it.
He knows how to flush it, which is important. And, you know, the Cowboys have been rolling there for a while. And I know it was Cooper Rush. It wasn't Dak when they went up to Philly. But Philly beat them up, too, man. Like, Philly's they are really, really good, Luke. Like, I know I'm not telling you something you don't know, but they look really good to me.
And my thing is, and I've been on this for a while, where let's talk about, like, the preparation that goes into games. So I'm going to they lost this game, but it was a Thursday nighter, I want to say, when the Packers played the Titans in Lambeau. Derrick Henry, I think, had about 80 yards. You know, they committed to the run. They were able to establish it to a degree, but it wasn't like a crazy game for Derrick Henry. But you look at how Green Bay played that defensively, and it was like, okay, to them, Tennessee is somewhat one-dimensional. Tannehill was just coming back. I think Treylon Burks has kind of emerged at the time, was not the guy he is. You know, when you're a rookie like that every week, you're kind of a new player. So they basically loaded up the box and were like, we're going to do everything in our power to try and stop Derrick Henry. And to a degree, their philosophy worked. Game didn't work out for them, but their philosophy worked, in my opinion, to a degree. What happens with the Eagles, which is very, very tough, is that you can't do that to them because they will roast you any way they want. So you take away the run game, they will throw it. They take away the deep ball, they'll throw it underneath. They can do everything offensively. And they did stumble for a little bit in the middle of the year, and now they're kind of back clicking. And you look at Tennessee. Tennessee, what are they good at defensively? Great at stopping the run. You know, they're a very hard-nosed defense. Are they the most skilled defense in the world? Probably not. Is their secondary the most, you know, skilled secondary? No. So now all of a sudden, I think Jalen threw for over 300 or something absurd. Brown had three TDs. Both Brown and Devonta Smith had 100-plus yards. So that's why I think this Eagles team is so dangerous, because on offense, whatever you take away, they don't give a damn. They'll do the opposite. You want to take away the run? Sure, we'll throw it. You want to drop some DBs back, play too high? We got Miles Sanders, and we have a quarterback that runs like a tailback. This is not a running quarterback. When Jalen Hurts has the ball in his hand and he's committed to running, I mean, he's a load to bring down.
Yep.
And I haven't even talked about their defense. Their defense is very stout. We'll get into that another day. But to me, this Eagles team is the real deal.
Luke, yesterday I saw a look on Jeff Saturday's face. They zoomed in on his face, and his mouth was open, and he almost looked a bit cross-eyed. And what I call, it's called Scrabble face. It's when you dig into the bag and you're playing Scrabbles, and you get four X's and a Z and another X and a Y, and you don't know what the hell you're going to do with it. And he had that look, man. And I was somewhat shocked when even some of his colleagues were like, this guy has just no business going. I give him credit in the Stones for saying it. But he had a look yesterday, man. It's like, what on earth did I get myself into? Was that a mistake to do that?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that what he's kind of realizing, and it's a give and take, because, you know, the announcers are all over him. I don't know if you listened to the broadcast last night. I think it was Collinsworth and Aikman the week before. And they're telling him, like, why isn't Indianapolis pushing the ball down the field? Why aren't they pushing the ball down? Why aren't they throwing it down the field? Well, there's a balance here, too, in Saturday's defense, where it's like they're not throwing it down the field because Micah Parsons might literally break Matt Ryan in half soon. I mean, this front seven, or this front four, I should say, for the Cowboys is elite. And the offensive line for the Colts is the opposite of elite. So there's a situation when they showed Saturday, especially late in the fourth, where it's like when you have an offense that is that limited and you can't throw the ball down the field because you can't protect, when you start getting down, there's no way. It's like, I don't know, you're just trapped. And you saw it yesterday. I think it was a two-point game at one point, 21-19.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden the turnover happens. And then all of a sudden, hey, we're down by nine and the clock is in the fourth quarter. We have to open this playbook up. And they simply cannot do it. Now all of a sudden the interceptions come because they can't do it. They can't throw the ball consistently down the field with this offensive line, with this pass game. And when you have a team that can rush the passer like the Cowboys, and then you pan to Jeff Saturday, and he's sitting there with Scrabble face because there's no riddle. Like, you can't solve the riddle.
Dude,
it was one of the worst Scrabble faces I've ever seen. The camera zoomed in on him, and he was catching flies, and he was kind of – he went cross-eyed for a second, and it was a mess.
Yeah, that's not good. That's concerning. I want to ask you about the other big game of the day, of course, would be Bengals beating Kansas City. How significant is it that Joe Burrow is 3-0 lifetime against Mahomes?
It's definitely significant. I mean, I kind of equate it to somewhat of the Seahawks Rams ordeal, let's call it, of the last decade. You know, when we were really good in Seattle, the years we were 13-3, 12-4. The Rams are 7-9 every year, but somehow it's a three-point game every single time. I think we lost one of them in St. Louis. This was when they were in St. Louis still, like 14-12 or something wild like that. And it always just felt like no matter what the situation, the Rams kind of were going to give us, you know, a tough matchup. And I think it still carried to yesterday. I mean, the Seahawks executed late there, but you were kind of hoping as a Seahawks fan that they would blow them out of the water with all the injuries. That being said, you look at the Bengals, like, I don't think I personally give the Bengals enough credit. I mean, they've won four in a row, and to be honest with you, I think they have a very good chance, especially the way that Baltimore's playing, of winning that division now. But to me, the Chiefs just seem to not make as many plays as they normally do, specifically against the Bengals. I mean, the Bengals got their number. I don't care what anybody says, and the Bengals are a good team, but to me, the Chiefs, they're better across the board. You know, maybe not at wide receiver, but outside of that, I think the Chiefs are better schematically. I think they have somewhat of a better defense. I mean, that's debatable, and I think Patrick Mahomes is probably the best player in the league right now with Josh Allen. But they seem to just really have their hands full with the Bengals.
Yeah, Joe Burrow, man, he just knows how to win. He finds ways to win.
And dude, 8-4. I thought they were dead early on in the season.
They started horribly. Remember how many sacks he was taking? He was getting beat up, man. It was crazy. All right, Al's brother's waiting patiently. We're going to come back. You guys are going to announce your pick. He's going to have tremendous information. He's riding high.
And remember, before Al's brother starts talking, Luke, I mentioned it yesterday, what our friendship means to us, all right? Hayes is a loner, and we're a team. And I love you, pal. Let's go to break.
We are a team.
We'll continue with this loser relationship.
Let's go.
Next. All right, so I think most of the audience is familiar with this group chat that I'm subjected to. And you got to see, you got to hear these idiots, Noodles. Like, I'll start sending you screen grabs.
Yeah, you got to do it. Like, I.
Why isn't
like,
Al's brother in the middle one? That's what I want.
Because I'm in the middle, because I went 2-0 yesterday. That's why. And
the
everyone
captain.
Knows what's coming.
Hayes. Hayes, going 2-0 right now isn't enough for you. You need us to lose, which we don't do. We don't do. We have, is it a 5-game spread we got right now?
Yeah.
Well, we're also 2-0 on the week. So I don't know why he's saying that like it's something that's not just the norm right now.
Layups and miracles. Layups and miracles, man.
Hayes is a fraud.
Layups and miracles.
Just like the Finns.
Al's brother, I'll give you credit. You like I was joking about this earlier, man, telling people that I for a living, listen to you, Al's brother, with the O-Dog, overrule a Super Bowl champ on a pick. Dolphins, Niners, and then your pick comes in. That's credit to you, man. Credit to you. Brock Purdy saved you yesterday.
Yeah, they did. I knew that defense was going to get to Tua, and Joey Bosa was going to be too much in the run game. And
even a blind squirrel gets a nut once in a while. So.
Yeah, you're right. I got to be honest. I love this shot. This is
great.
An Emmy. Me right in the middle with four just buffoons circling me.
It reminds me of that Noodles Brady Bunch. Remember the Brady Bunch that you guys did a few years ago?
It's got a Brady Bunch vibe. All right, Al's brother, here's another layup for you. The money's coming in on Tampa, so on FanDuel it's up to Bucks -3.5 at home. Go ahead, announce your pick, give us your information. Who do you like tonight and why?
Well, look, I think a big reason why this number isn't larger is because the Saints have had the number of the Buccaneers in the Tom Brady era. They've covered 4 straight games against the spread as the underdog, and you have a better overall spread cover rating this season than Tampa does overall. But I just don't see it happening tonight. I really do not. It's time for the Bucs to flip their switch here. I saw signs of life in Seattle when they were out in London, and despite the loss again last week, against the Browns. Two things that I'm seeing. The run game starting to come to life. 161 yards against Seattle. 96 yards against Cleveland. There's no rush defense here in New Orleans. They rank 22nd in the NFL. They get that going. Opens up the play action. That's where old Tommy Boy's going to carve you up. And the second thing I'm noticing, Chris Godwin getting healthy, coming off that ACL injury. He's becoming an X factor. First 7 games, just 6.22 yards per target, 64% catch rating. Didn't score a touchdown. The last 2 games, 8.62 yards per target, 85% catch rating, nearly 90 yards a game, and he scored in back-to-back games here. Look at the injury report on New Orleans. It is despicable. Tom Brady is licking his chops. And the most concerning stat for you, Hazy B,
Andy Dalton, go ahead.
0-12 in his last 12 primetime road games, about to go 0-13. We're laying the points with the Bucks. Let's
Buck
go.
Buck up. Let's go.
Buck up.
All right, Luke, I guess you're in lockstep with these two. How could you not be after that tremendous information?
Yeah, I mean, it's factual. He's correct on that. And the other thing is, I think at this point, obviously the Bucks have underperformed all year. Todd Bowles came out middle of the week, really called out the veterans, the older guys, the leaders. And it's that time. I mean, end of the year right now, you're in a divisional game. You got to come out and take care of business. You're better than this team. I mean, you have talent across the board. And we just found out about an hour ago that Lattimore is not playing for the Saints. So that'll open up a little more, I think, of some throws. I really do think Tampa Bay is going to establish the run tonight. Defensively, Tampa Bay is very stout. I think they come out and make an absolute statement today. I like this
How
one.
Is this line not
Shit,
like seven and a half? How is this not at least a touchdown?
Yeah, I'd probably still take it.
Yeah, I would too.
Hayes, a perfect weekend for Team Luke's brothers. Shout out Al's brother with the override on the 49ers pick.
Yeah,
yes.
A perfect weekend. I think we're 4.5, 5 up. There it is. Down
Lots of time, man. I'm lurking.
You want to talk about this text thread? Oh, this text thread. You were the one who came in there and said, don't let me get hot.
Oh, that's, yeah.
that's right. That's no, follow it up. Right. Follow it up by don't let me do it. Don't let me get hot, guys. Don't let me do it.
Don't let me. You know what happens when I
guys,
get hot.
Guys, Al's brother, Luke, let's finish this convo with a team dab all into the camera on three. One, two, three.
Oh, it's disgusting.
JP, play it, JP.
Disgusting.
And we're the three best friends that anybody could have. We're the three best friends that anyone could have. We're going to do things.
I cannot wait to blow past you losers. I cannot wait to blow past you clowns. It's just a matter of time. Luke, we'll see you soon. Al's brother, good luck tonight. Luke's brother's on the heater. They're on
Cheers,
the Bucks. Minus 3.5. Final hour coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2.